What's up, everybody? Welcome to Declarations of War. Your host for this evening, myself, Fang.
Hello, Fang in the channel. Thank you.
And our very special guest, the amazing returning co-founder and co-host of Declarations of War, the one and only Jimmer Linz.
Hello. My goodness, what am I going to do after that intro?
You could try not being 4 years late to work.
I'll work on that.
We have so much to talk about with Jimmer coming up, as well as, you know, our thoughts on Eve Down Under, the Mitanni and Reddit, and all the drama around the Kickstarter, new info about the Command Destroyers, and updates from our latest contracts, and much more. First, some special shout-outs. I want to give a shout-out to Arkantantix, Griefhaken, Bam Stroker, The Boatman, Bethany from Providence, everyone else at Eve Down Under that made me feel not just welcome, but like an absolute superstar. Much more on that to come in a minute or two, but so much to talk about there.
I would like to give a shout-out to Corinne Ames, who's back in the game after a almost four-year absence, and the guy that really got me into PvP and EVE. So welcome back, Corinne. To Leopold Kane for working with me and the other role-playing team, the rest of the role-playing team in Corelli, for working out what we're going to do regarding the Upwell Consortium shareholder hoo-ha, for those of you that follow the law. And finally, to the MC Logistics team for moving jump freighters non-stop for a week, moving us between three staging systems in a single week. Thank you very much to them.
Fang, does Corelli SRP the Robe and Wizard hat, or how does that work?
Oh, snap.
only if it's fitted with faction modules.
Ah, okay, it has to be a Doctrine Robe and Wizard hat. Gotcha.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Jimmer? I want a faction robe hat and wizard hat. That would be awesome. All right, so my shout outs. I don't actually have anybody specific, except I just want to say it's really good to be back, and I'm glad to be back with all of my friends in Noir, and I've said it in a couple of other places. It's amazing to be an MC. I told a couple of people that I came back at the right time, because it's like 2 days after Noir joined MC or something like that. It's like, hey, I'm back. It's like, hey, we're part of this. So that's very cool. And like Fang said, a big, huge shout out to the MC Logistics teams. Those guys are amazing and have really been pulling a lot of stuff around. So thanks to those guys.
Awesome. And a shout out to eve-bet.com, our longtime sponsor, who I actually got to meet, Eve Bet Hunt. He's the founder of EveBet. I got to sit right next to him at dinner at Eve Down Under. It was amazing. They're New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on esports, real-life sports, EVE stuff, all with your ISK. They've handled hundreds of trillions in bets since opening. They're very reliable, very trustworthy, very easy-to-use site. Stuff like the Alliance Tournament, NHL, NFL... MMA, you name it, you can bet on it. They're always adding more stuff. And they also have more casual games if you're into it, like blackjack and slots. So go check them out, eve-bet.com. A bit of poll results. We had a poll, which of the new Doomsdays is the coolest? I was very surprised that the Cap Overload won out. I don't know if we talked about this before, but I mean, I know we talked about the Doomsdays. I am like so excited about the Hand of God. That's the one that really caught me, which is where you just get to take a whole pile of subcaps and throw them to some random ass point in the system. It's not like a jump drive where you're jumping them 100 kilometers in a predictable direction. You target these dudes and they just blink. Like, literally at some random point in the entire system. Who knows where they're going to end up or how far from planets or any of that stuff. I could see people using this to make crazy safe spots. I could see this being used to delag grids by just jumping massive amounts of subcaps off of them. Caps don't get moved, so you could like use this against bubbles and just jump bubbles to a random point in space. But apparently our audience is most excited about the Cap Overload Doomsday, which turns a target ship into a living smart bomb based on how much capacitor they have.
Does the ship get destroyed?
Potentially.
Nice.
I think it does the damage to itself, although don't quote me on that.
No, wow. I don't think it does.
Oh, it doesn't? Okay.
I think it works. What they said was, and the guy who was giving the presentation, he said he wasn't 100% sure, but he said that the mechanics were similar to smart bombs.
Wow. So you can, like, just make a ship into a giant feck-off smart bomb?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, what? If you do it to another super cap, I imagine the damage is going to be quite considerable.
I was about to say, is it proportional to the cap size of the target ship? That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm not sure the exact numbers, like if it's you do the raw damaging cap or if there's some multiplier or some inverse multiplier or it's less damage than the total or how that's going to work. But it does have something to do with the cap pool on the target.
Somebody's going to figure out, like, they're going to theory craft up with the right rigs and the right drugs and the right everything else and links and all of that stuff. They're going to figure out some way to get, like, something with just a stupid amount of a shell of a tank to just go in and just blap entire fleets. It'll be glorious.
Yeah, it should be cool. But this kind of leads in nicely to our interview with Jimmer here. This is changing, and so much has changed since you last played.
Quite a bit.
Our audience when you stopped playing, why, what you've been up to, and why you're back. And we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Actually, I have a couple questions myself based on what I was seeing here. But I stopped in 2011, came back briefly in 2012, but for no more than a month or so, and then I've been gone ever since. And the main reason is because of some major shifts in my real life that caused me to change my career from being a software developer in real life. I am now a full-time audiobook narrator and a voice actor, and I've been getting a reasonable amount of success at that. But as you can imagine, going from a 20-year software career to something in the more creative field took a major hit to income. Also, there's been some issues with my wife and some health problems. I don't need to go into the details. We'll just say that I was extraordinarily busy and very distracted for the last few years. But things are settling down a little bit, and I was really missing all of my friends and the way we would, you know, play the game and have fun and go kill shit and get killed. So that's the main reason why I'm back. I was missing the game, and I found that I had a little bit more bandwidth to devote to it. So here I am. I'm glad to be back, and glad that things are settling down a little bit.
That's awesome.
Welcome back.
What was the biggest shock for you when you came back in terms of how the game had changed during your absence?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I don't know if there were any major shocks, although I keep getting like a bunch of little ones, like these new Doomsdays you're talking about. I actually hadn't really heard much about them, and so I want to ask you what the Scythe one is after we're done with this. But I think some of the big things that that I thought were interesting was that there were a lot of changes to the way Eve looks. Nothing major, but it just looks cleaner, and it's also a lot more responsive. I mean, we just fought a little while ago in a several hundred man fleet, and I couldn't imagine that being what it was, which was not bad. I was like, okay, we're going to be here for a few hours and everybody's going to be disconnecting. It's going to be a complete, you know, hairball. But it turned out to be a great fight, and the time dilation stuff and the performance improvements are quite cool and have really, really, really improved the experience of playing the game, at least, you know, for me. Some of the other things, I think one of my favorite features is the buy all and fit window, where you can like get a fitting and you can just click buy all and it'll just buy everything. So I can go to Amar or go to Jita and just be like, okay, I've got this fitting, I'm going to buy it all, now I'm going to click a button and fit it all. You're ready to go in, you know, 2 minutes instead of 20. That's really nice. In terms of things like the new ships and stuff, boy, the T3 Desis are just sexy. And I know people hate them, but they are amazing. So, you know, there's those and some of the new modules, like the ancillary armor repairers. That was one of those ones where I slapped my forehead and said, that's freaking brilliant. Why weren't those before? It's like, that's a really great idea. So a lot of the new modules are really exciting. A lot of the new ships I'm really excited to see, especially the new command desis, which I think we're going to talk about later. But as far as like There's like a huge shock. No, nothing like, my God, the whole game has changed. The game seems very much similar, except that with the Sov changes, that's a big one, actually, thinking about it. The way the Entosis stuff works, that's probably the single biggest change. But given that I didn't really get engaged too much with Sov warfare before, it was one of those things where I get to stand back and go, oh, that looks interesting. And so now, you know, I see it changing and say that's going to have a huge impact on the game. But except for, you know, when I fit an Entosis link or when I go out in another ship, that's really as far as it goes, because, you know, I don't really do the Sov thing with MC.
In terms of ships, a lot of ships have been added since you've been out. Have you been trying anything new that you hadn't been doing before?
Yeah, the new Sisters of Eve covert ships are a lot of fun. I get a lot of mileage out of my Astro, on the carebearing side more than anything else, because I, you know, when we're not on contract or when things are quiet, I do like to go and hack me a few relic sites, and it makes me some nice isk on the side. Like I said, the new T3 destroyers are pretty damn sexy. I'm trying to think of the other new ships. I haven't really shipped in. What I've been doing is I've been filling out my skills so that I can better fly the ships that I was sort of like, I can sort of fly this, but I can't really, you know, fit it as well as I should. So I've been focusing more on that than on some of the shiny new blingy ships. But I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to the command desis. Those are going to be real interesting.
Yeah, I'm super excited about those. Probably, like I've said it before and I'll say it again, more excited about that than any other ship, like, ever. I think, aside from, like, maybe when I first heard about the Dominix, I was like, oh, I really want to be in a Dominix. That was, like, years ago.
Yeah.
Years and years ago.
Well, I mean, and the stuff that's coming up is really exciting, too. It's like I said before, it feels like I came back at the right time, because there's a whole lot of really cool changes. They're not all perfect, but, you know, there's some really cool stuff that makes the game more interesting and more engaging, I think. But also, you know, there's the new command SEs coming. There's the micro jump drive generators. The micro jump drives are, that was one thing I was like, what? You can just pop from one place to another. That was kind of cool. The changes to fall off and stuff, you know, the logistics, the new logistics frigates, those look really cool. So I'm looking forward to all of the upcoming changes as well as the ones that we've already seen in play.
Yeah, they're going to be good. Ah, so much to look forward to. The game is changing rapidly. In some ways, it's kind of a nice way to be back, because things are going to be so different in a few months. Like, everyone's going to be having to learn anyway.
Yeah, it kind of puts you back on an even footing, you know, or not even, but, you know, it's nice to have new stuff come into play, because it stirs up the pot and it makes it possible for you to learn new techniques and to refine old ones. And sometimes stuff just gets scrapped, you know, and then the game doesn't become stale, which I think is one of the problems that we've seen in the past with long term retention of players. If the game is the same day in and day out, people don't come back all the time, you know?
Now, let's get into some of the questions that you've had. So, on the Scythe, it's going to be a focused beam that slashes across space and does damage in that trajectory.
Wow, so an actual directional, you know, like a spinal mount kind of weapon?
Yeah, like, if you remember Akira, maybe? Like that laser weapon
more like
that would
wave
drag
motion
across
gun
and
from,
then...
Yeah. I was thinking like the wave motion gun from Star Blazers, if anybody's old enough to remember that. You old enough for that, Fang?
No, I don't think I am.
But you correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think I've ever heard of another weapon or projected system in EVE that relies on the alignment of your ship. They're all like you target and fire, or they're AOE. I don't think I've ever heard of one that's like, you know, you got to point your ship in a certain direction and then it goes across, or it goes in that direction. Am I right there?
Well, the bomb launcher is the only one.
Oh, there's a good point. Yeah, that's an excellent point.
But yeah, this is totally unique in its mechanics.
That's going to be interesting. I remember the early Doomsdays and just like, you know, whole grids just dying. That was really not much fun. This looks kind of entertaining.
I think that the code, the base code that they're using for this, because the idea is that you are now able to select a point in space. You need to be able to select a point in space, not just a ship, for this to work. It's also being used for the new fighter bomber mechanics, because now you move your fighter bombers. You don't just tell your fighter bombers, attack this ship. You can actually move them to a specific point and then tell them to do something.
Yeah, the UI is pretty interesting to see. It involves multiple mouse clicks, but basically you move along the X-axis and then the Y-axis and try to get the direction of where things are going to be. The other Doomsday is the Pike, which is going to be the most similar thing to the Doomsday that currently exists, where it's going to focus not on a ship, but on a point in space, and just constantly burn damage in that cone, almost like a Saro from Bleach.
Huh.
All these anime references.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Fang.
I just said all these anime references that I don't get.
Well, it seems like that might be useful against like a POS tower or something, right? If you get close enough and, you know, point blank range and just fire at it, would that be something you could pull off?
I don't think it's going to do enough damage to hurt a tower.
Yeah.
And the other important drawback of this particular weapon is that it has an AoE Newt effect around the Titan, such that it like completely zeroes the capacitor of everything within, I think it's 15 kilometers or something like that.
Good God, man.
So you can't jump in a whole bunch of Titans and focus fire on something.
Well, that's why it got zero votes, because that's a hell of a drawback.
You could use it offensively, though. Drop it into the middle of an enemy cap fleet, cap them out.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Actually, it might serve to help you when you're being tackled by a Hicks, too.
Potentially, yes. I think it's designed to cut through, like a lot of these mechanics, designed to cut through a large fleet and to encourage. If you look at all these mechanics, Command Destroyers, the new Doomsdays, it's trying to discourage F1 anchor gameplay and reward fleets that can spread out, be tactical, strike from multiple locations, split their fleet into smaller groups. And this Doomsday, I think, is yet another tool to sort of try and counter the blob mechanic.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've been seeing the same kind of pattern, and I think it's going to be painful for a lot of people, but I think it'll also rekindle a lot of interest in the game and the people who really enjoy the fleet fights but don't enjoy the, okay, everybody hold on, gate's red, jump, warp to this, lock this, fire on this, you know, when you suddenly could find yourself and whoever might have been near you at the time 150 kilometers away because of a 3-Desi or any of these other mechanics that can yank you around or cause the fleet to have to split up because you're going to be risking being blown out of the water, it's going to force pilots to fly a lot smarter and to rely more on their own wits than on the FC's commands, you know?
Yeah, that's only going to get more so the case with as things spread out, the carriers are going to play a role with that. The new grids are going to be 8,000 clicks wide. Things are going to get very spread and disorganized very quickly, I think, in the new EVE combat meta. That's going to put a lot of stress on the current way we run fleets. I think that's the very way that fleets are organized and run is going to have to change. Like, I'm thinking multiple combat channels minimum.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And a lot more reliance on in-game comm tools if you've got large fleets.
Quite possibly, yeah. Especially if you get separated from your unusual group and you can't warp back in for whatever reason.
Yeah, and the size of those grids is going to make it possible to be, you know, seeing what everybody else is up to much more easily than you can right now. And that's going to create more, you know, both tactical advantages and disadvantages.
Mm-hmm.
I think fleets are going to be a lot hairier. They're going to be more dangerous. They're going to be a lot more fun, but they're also going to be a lot more dangerous.
Any other questions, Jimmer, as far as, you know, new stuff or stuff you've been curious about since you've come back? I think this is a really great opportunity, especially for new players, to hear what it's like when a veteran sees the game through new eyes.
Let me think here. You know, I don't have a whole lot of questions. I went over some of the things that I thought were interesting. I'm going to be real curious to see how these new citadels work, but I'm not sure that that's really a question so much as I'm excited about it. You know, there's been... It's hard for me to keep track of how much has really, you know, changed recently. Because for it's interesting, sometimes I'll be like, wait, wait, this doesn't happen anymore? And people are like, oh, no, that went away 2 years ago. Or, oh, no, that went away last month or whatever. I guess I've been back for a few months now. But it still feels like some stuff happened real recently in people's heads and other stuff happened years ago. But for me, it's all like, you know, it changed all at once. And that's interesting to me. But yeah, you know, I remember when I first saw the micro jump drives, I was like, those are cool. But I can't think of any specific mechanics I've got a direct question about right now. I wish I could, because that would be much more interesting content for the podcast.
Well, let's broaden it to not just mechanics. What about politics or the way that the EVE meta is working? Because obviously that's changed quite a bit since you've been going as well. There's, new sheriffs in town in various parts of the game. And then some things have remained the same. Although, not really. Like, technically, Providence is still owned by the people that owned it when you left, but they've changed in character quite a bit. Pravi's no longer the wet noodle that they once were.
I just realized I'd been hitting the wrong button on my push to talk here. The thing, you know, some of the things that have changed is like, you know, when I left, I don't recall there being such a thing as an anchor. Maybe that was being done in other fleets, but I don't recall that being something that we were doing. Also, the concept of having, you know, the multiple Logi squads or the Logi ball in the main fleet. You know, it used to be they would be a little closer together, is my recollection, and you didn't have two groups trying to maneuver around one another. That may just be an artifact of larger fleets, but that's a new experience for me. Some of the changes, watching Imperium, it's like they're so big, it's just like, you know, it feels to me, sometimes I watch what goes on and I watch all the trash talk that happens. And in terms of the meta, I just watch them and goes like, are they playing the same game everyone else is? Because it seems like they're playing a game that no one else wants to. And that's interesting to me to see that, you know, some of the stuff that they've been doing lately to try and stir that up. And yeah, Providence is, of course, no longer the Providence it was, but it's still kind of, it's still Providence, I guess. It's just a different Providence. It's interesting to see. A lot of the things that I've seen coming back is like there seems to be a lot more maneuverability and a lot more tactical options as opposed to strategic options. And I think that's all to the good. I really do. The more maneuverable ships, the faster ships, you know. Oh, I know what the big thing was that just made me go, what? Now I remember. The biggest thing that shocked me was that interceptors are now interdiction nullified. That was huge. That was a big thing for me. I was like, wait, wait, what? And I think it's amazing, and it's had such a profound effect on the game because it allows people to travel so much more easily. But, you know, I can see why they did it the way they did, but it also makes me think, why is it that interceptors got made interdiction nullified when really it should probably have been covert ops, not scepters? And that's something that in my head, I'm just like, why did they do it that way?
Well, because covered ops can already warp cloaks. It's a pretty sizable advantage that Inthes didn't have.
Well, no, that's true, I guess. And I can understand that from a game mechanics perspective, that's what you'd want. But from like just like an immersion aspect, it just seems weird, you know. But I guess I can see what you're saying. Yeah, they would make them pretty overpowered.
Yeah, the Inthes change was kind of huge. Go ahead, Faye.
I think the reason they did it was because they wanted the interceptors to intercept. So the because they made that change at the same time that they changed how warping worked. And the warp speed of all ships was changed. And the idea being that a single interceptor pilot or small numbers of interceptor pilots can chase larger ships in warp.
Right.
And come out and tackle them. And I think the reason why they gave them the interdiction nullification wasn't to give everyone in Nullsec a shuttle, which is kind of what's happened, but to allow those ships to go anywhere and tackle without fear of landing in a bubble and then not being able to tackle anything.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And you know, having used that change with the warp speed change and stuff multiple times since I came back to catch ships on gates, you know, in a few fleets where I was like flying tackle for you, as a in fact, Fang, you know, where we caught people running away, I can see why they did that. You know, it's a very good point. I really like flying interceptors these days. They are a lot of fun. More fun than I remember.
I think they were always fun. It always had a special place in my heart. It was the first ship that I ever flew as a mercenary, and you know, I've always kept coming back to interceptors. It, you know, it's as a CEO in FC, you kind of have to be in different ships sometimes, like just to be the anchor of a fleet or to be the target caller. It's good to be, you know, in the fleet that, excuse me, in the ships of the fleet, so you actually like can more intuitively understand the ranges and stuff involved. Or as an interceptor, maybe you don't have time to pay attention to that. But anytime I don't have to deal with that kind of stuff, like, I'm always falling back to the Interceptor because it's such a wonderful ship.
Indeed. Quick question. Did they buff combat Interceptors? Because I feel like the Tyrannus is tankier than it used to be.
I don't think so.
They did all get rebalanced. All the Interceptors did get rebalanced when those changes came in.
I wouldn't call it a straight buff, though. I think they were just kind of adjusted.
Yeah, it just felt like it wasn't like the sort of the very small glass cannon it used to be. You know, it feels like I can take a couple of shots now.
I forget.
I think the ones that had the biggest change when the change first happened were the Crow and the Malediction. And for a period, Crow and Malediction long range missile fit fleets were the meta. And that lasted for sort of 2 or 3 months, and then they nerfed them a bit.
Yeah. I've been flying the Hecate a lot lately. I'm sorry, go ahead, Alec.
Jammer, you missed out on the Crow fleet. That was so ridiculous. It's a proper doctrine. Like, they would take them into large fleet fights, just 40, 50 Crows with missiles and ballistic controls.
And you can't bubble them or stop them or anything, right?
Exactly. They're all riding around at 4K a second.
Wow. How did that work? I imagine if you had enough of them, you could pretty much take care of what you needed to.
Yeah, it was a factor of numbers, and they were almost uncatchable. Anything that could catch them would die to the missile fire. So it was super safe doctrine. They could just roam with impunity and kill ratters, no problem. And then they nerfed the agility. I think they nerfed the hit points, and I think they nerfed the damage of the Crow.
Well, you know, if it became like the meta like that, I can understand.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Well, you know, it's Eve. That's the thing. One of the things I love about Eve is that the players are always going to find a way to secure the most advantage possible. And, you know, that means sometimes that they're going to do stuff that the developers just either didn't expect or would just be like, you did what? Because I don't think anybody in their right mind would expect somebody to field like a 50 or 60 or 100 man interceptor fleet when they're putting these numbers together on a whiteboard and going, okay, I think it should be able to go this fast and turn this quickly because that's what it'll support its intended role. You know, they probably thought about some ways it could be abused, but I have my doubts that anybody at CCP says, you know, what would happen if they put 100 of these together and went after much larger fleets? You know, just, you know, just wouldn't really come up.
Well, something you said earlier should serve to a good transition to our next thing that we're talking about, which is the Batani Eve Reddit, the Kickstarter, and all the related drama. As you've noted, the Imperium is kind of playing a different game. And it's, to be honest, it's a game they've been playing for a while, but it seems like a game the rest of Eve has not really decided yet, or if they ever do, that they want to join in on, which is the real politic, diplomatic game. I think to their credit, the Imperium / CFC did a really good job of identifying what their goals were, which was to maintain the cohesion of their empire post-sovereignty change. And then they figured out what they needed to do to do that. They had an alliance in the beta test, they paid attention, they had people on the CSM that were able to have an intimate understanding of this stuff, and then, you know, once the changes were announced, they sort of had an idea of what steps to take to make sure that it would be minimally disruptive for them. And most of the things that they did were successful in that regard, whereas the other players who were sort of at their level did not take that amount of care. And as a result, the Imperium stayed strong and other people had, you know, some pretty severe disruptions. PL, BL, NC Dot, Nulli Secunda, etc. So, yeah. That's kind of where we're at now. They're quite happy. There's no one in EVE or even no combination of two major groups in EVE that can really fuck with them. So they're quite safe.
Yeah, but they, you know, the whole Viceroy thing and the going into LOSEC and I'm not sure what, you know, they intended there, but maybe it feels a little like they're wagging the dog a bit. You know, that they're creating this scenario in order to give themselves an opportunity to have, you know, more content for themselves. But I'm not sure how well it's going to work, because when you drop in with the kinds of fleets that they field, people are just going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go over here, or I'm going to run somewhere else. I'm just going to take my stuff down, or it's just going to be dick stars everywhere. And there won't be any content after a while, because people will just be like, oh, here comes Imperium, and they're going to drop a fleet 5, 6, 100 times the size of something we can field. So, yeah, you know, it's yours, guys. We're out. And I don't know how long that's going to be effective for them.
Yeah, I mean, Pandemic Legion also faced this problem after a bit, and that, oh, it's PL, like, we just can't fight, so let's just dock up. I think they'll probably need to shop around for an opponent that's willing to fight them. They'll probably need to come in subpar doctrines or spread their numbers out or something like that. But, you know, they're going to have to find some content for themselves just to keep busy.
Yeah, I mean, but part of it is, like, you know, they're claiming that they're doing this under the guise of trying to bring new players to the game or somehow, you know, reinvigorate the game and so forth. But it seems like this will have, if any effect, it will have the opposite effect, because if all you're doing is pushing massive amounts of penis around and not really, you know, giving any shrift to the fact that other people would like to be able to play their way, which is fine. The game doesn't, you know, require you to do that. But honestly, let's be realistic. When you're doing what they're doing, you're just either forcing people to move elsewhere or dock up and play another game, you know?
Well, yeah, but that'll be true of wherever they go, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they particularly care. I think that the State of the Gunion broadcast, and then the, you know, the push into Cloud Ring, and then Empire LOSEC regions was more or less, I mean, they knew what was going to happen. Okay, they got caught out a little bit with Pandemic Horde. You know, resetting to AUTZ timers.
Honey, that was funny.
To kind of troll them, yeah, which was hilarious. But they pretty much knew what was going to happen. They knew that most people were just going to evac. They're not stupid. But it was the reason they did it then, because they could have done it any time. They could have done it weeks ago. They could have done it later. Was because of the Kickstarter. And it was a PR exercise and a propaganda exercise. And that's been the most interesting thing, because in the past, when goons have said, oh, you know, rah, rah, we're going to do this, we're going to do the other, most of EVE has pretty much ignored them. Like, you know, goons toot the horn and the goons step in, fall in line behind mittens, and they go rah, rah, rah. But the rest of EVE just doesn't really care. I mean, they ignore it. But this time, it turned into a full-blown battle on, not in EVE, but on Reddit, Twitter, local channel memes being posted. I mean, I recommend, if you're listening to this and you haven't read it, go to the Reddit EVE page and read the post by Tel Contar of Spectre Fleet.
It's worth reading, he's right.
Called Narrative and the Strength of Nations. Read the post. And he's right, because they have 61% of the players in the big alliances game. So there's no one that can fight them. So instead, what's happening is the wars are happening on Reddit. The wars are happening in local. It's hilarious.
Hearts and minds, baby. Hearts and minds.
And it should also be said that they did something that they hadn't really done before, or certainly not for a very long time that I can remember, which was to push into low sec. And they knew it was going to be challenging. And I think, you know, Snuffbox and Shadow Cartel and friends have been giving them some pretty tough times in the last week. There's been a couple of battles over towers where the CFC, even though they had the numbers advantage, pretty much got dunked.
Yep, there were a couple. I was reading the battle reports. I was like, ooh, that's ooh. But then again, you know, for them, that's like a drop in the bucket. It is interesting, though. You know, you're right. The battles being fought in, you know, in more the propaganda side. And I've been reading this stuff going on Reddit and so forth. And it just feels like the Kickstarter and all of the drumming of this and the accusations of conflicts of interest or of, you know, pocket lining and all of this nefarious skullduggery. That, you know, I love this part of EVE because whether, you know, no matter where you stand on it, it's one of the things that first attracted me to it. You know, back in the days of the Guiding Hand Social Club, that's the archetypal sort of like that happened kind of thing. And we're seeing it again, I think, you know, perhaps writ a little bit differently, but still, it's interesting to watch.
So let's catch our audience up on this. So it's not just what's happening in game. As Fang mentioned, there is a huge meta war being played out in Reddit and to an extent the gaming press in general. There was a book, it's coming out. It's called The History of the Great Wars. It's going to be fantastic. We hope to have the author of it on this show. It was run by a Kickstarter. The Kickstarter was very successful, and it's going to be a history book, basically, of EVE Online. Basically, the Bob verse fix and all those guys down south and how that turned into Bob versus the North and the rise of Goonswarm and all that stuff. That period of early EVE history, which is, well, I guess it was early. It's early now, when I think about it, that's pretty much when I was starting to play. I feel super old. but it's going to be tremendous. And there was a lot of research done and a lot of first-hand accounts and second-hand accounts and putting everything together, telling it from different perspective with the goal of having it be an actual war history book that you would pick up at a bookstore. But it's about spaceships.
So, that is cool.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. I'm a backer, full disclosure. I backed it. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, that's going to be great.
I want to get him on the podcast so I can be like, hey, I narrate audiobooks. You should, like, hire me.
Dude, hopefully when he hears your voice, the choice is clear. Chimmer, sexiest voice we've had in the show, except for maybe Lord Melder.
Oh boy, there's a challenger for the throne.
Oh yeah.
Perhaps we shall have to have Thunderdome.
The head of Rooks and Kings. If you haven't watched any of the Clarion Call videos, Jimmer, I don't know if those came out before or after you left, but
they don't sound familiar. But I'll go check them out after we're done here.
Oh my gosh, just panties melting everywhere across the entire world when he was on our podcast.
Nice.
Underwear, but just to be clear, flying out of windows in general, both sexes.
Just to be clear for the listeners, the Kickstarter in the book you're talking about is absolutely not the one that is the source and the core of all this weird drama that's been the last month or so. And
this
that's something I think a
pretext.
Few people who are only seeing this from the fringes would not know.
Right. This is just the pretext. So that Kickstarter is not controversial. That book is not controversial. Everyone's super excited about it. Everyone was brought in on it. The drama came in when the Mitanni, who runs a media site called themitanni.com, saw an opportunity to get more EVE books done. And so he contacted an author that writes fiction, military fiction, and basically pitched him on the idea of doing an EVE fiction book based on the Fountain War, which was a war that the CFC won against Test and various other alliances. It was a really cool war that brought a lot of people in. It was a very big deal. Not at all an odd choice to have a book written about it, I think. So they started a Kickstarter, and this author, who has had some notoriety, although I had never personally heard of him before, but he was, you know, a fairly successful mainstream published author of military fiction. And the Kickstarter was for what I guess people consider a very large amount of money, $150,000, to go from not like word one to finished book printed and distributed. Basically, what happened was the people that lost the Fountain War and just everyone that hates Goonswarm in general took great exception to the fact that Goons would try to pitch a Kickstarter to make a book about a war that they won in Eve. And that situation has snowballed incredibly, and was timed in with the invasion of Cloud Ring, which was, you know, at least in part designed to increase activity and focus and attention on the Kickstarter, as well as try to create content for CFC. And the firing of the Mitanni.com's lead editor and replacing with another one, and that person coming out with an AMA on Reddit, you know, describing the Mitanni himself and the website in not flattering terms, and some of the leaders of Pandemic Legion, Pandemic Horde, Test, etc., coming out in force on Reddit with a lot of tell-alls and chat logs and all this stuff, just throwing really everything at CFC to make them look as bad as possible. Meanwhile, the Kickstarter is not doing well at all. From CFC's point of view, they want the Kickstarter to succeed to, you know, obviously get their project done successfully, but they're also taking exception to the tone in which a lot of the criticism is happening, which, to be fair, is pretty nasty in nature, and pretty much any reference, mention, or at all acknowledgement that the Kickstarter exists, or what it's about, or Goons in general, even by third-party media sources who are just, like, talking about things, like, in passing, like, they're getting their videos slammed with negative comments, Reddit is just piling on them horrifically, and so CFC is like, well, guys, hold on a second, like, this is way too toxic. Okay, you don't like our Kickstarter, whatever, but the way you're doing this is, like, anyone that's a fan of these media folks, or the author, or the websites that are covering the story, if they were to find out, you know, what you guys are writing, why would they ever want to join Eve? Like, you're just giving a bad name to the community. So that's where the battle lines have been drawn. There's a lot of accusations flying around, like Mitanni's doing the Kickstarter to pocket all the money, which I think is pretty ridiculous. There's accusations that the whole Cloud Ring thing was designed to promote the book, which doesn't entirely seem to be the case, but even if it was, I don't really think there's anything wrong with that. Obviously, it was not successful, but I think the concept of doing something in-game to promote something out of game is pretty tried and true in one way or another. They're just doing it much bigger because they're huge. So I don't think that's as left field of an idea as a lot of people that are detracting from it make it sound.
I think the idea that you say that it's ridiculous that he's pocketing all the money, I think the idea that he would be taking 50%, which is what the accusation is, the Mitanni.com takes 50% of the proceeds from the Kickstarter, just accusations based on these supposed leaks. I don't think it's ridiculous at all. I mean, the Mitanni.com is a project that makes money, has done for a while.
Yeah, it makes money in, like, the sense that I guess it has ads, it makes a couple $1,000s a year. It's not exactly a multi-million dollar media empire.
I think there's, you know, probably there's probably some merit to the idea that he was planning to make some money, but I don't think that we could really determine is he planning to take 50% of the Kickstarter. That seems excessive, but it's hard to say. I think what is interesting to me is like the level of virulence against this project from the outset, and the part that kind of like got me, even as somebody who's been gone for so long and hasn't really been following Eve except just sort of like very generally until recently, I don't know how anybody could be shocked that there would be this kind of snapback on it, that there would be this kind of reaction of you, what? How about no? Because goons have made the CFC and Goon Swarm and all of that, they've made their game. They've made their reputation based on being despised. That was their thing. It's kind of like their raison d'etre. It's what they are. And to think that somebody would start to hate on them for something that they did is totally unsurprising. But the thing that I think really kicked people off, I think what really sparked it off, because otherwise people would have just been like, hey, it's goons being goons. But, you know, what really started to hack some of these other players off and some of these other entities off was that they brought in a fiction author who was going to write an account of this war, but they were going to tell it from the perspective of CFC and Imperium or whatever they're calling themselves. And they were going to fictionalize it and probably in a manner that would be extraordinarily unflattering to the other participants. So I think it was less about them, you know, being like, you know, you can't tell this story because you're the one who won it, but more about you shouldn't tell this story and be lying about it, because when you put this thing together and it says it's based on real events, when people read it, they're going to think that it's the truth, and it's not, or it won't be based on what we've seen so far. And I think they had a legit complaint there.
Yeah, I'm not entirely surprised the project wasn't well received. Just because it's, yeah, anything that's like that fresh for folks. I think one reason that the history of the Great Wars is being able to be told is that like a lot of it has to do with Band of Brothers, which isn't around anymore, and the major players in Band of Brothers are not major players in many alliances anymore. So it's kind of like enough in the past that people are going to be okay with it. Plus, there was a lot of buy-in by ahead of the project, like getting all the people that were involved to give their stories, and you know, having this concept that it would try to be as unbiased as possible and all that stuff. Whereas the Goon thing was like, yeah, we're definitely doing this book. It's about perspective of someone that's fighting in and for in our army for us, the winning side, you know, and that's just what it's going to be about. It's going to be a narrative, which means it's probably not going to be unbiased, all that stuff. And yeah, not terribly surprised. The vitriol level surprised me a little bit. More in the sense of volume, not necessarily the content itself. Like, there are Gurgoons people who, if Goonswarm or anyone from Goonswarm or the Mitanni or anyone connected to the Mitanni are involved in literally anything, it's immediately the evil, most worst thing that they've ever seen. That they came out in such droves. And, you know, a lot of the stuff probably prompted by the metagame. You know, it was backed up by people who are otherwise unconnected with that movement, if you want to call them that. That took me a little by surprise, and it's a little disappointing as well, because it does very much limit the kind of stories that can be told about Eve. You know, it could have easily been like, hey, we're doing this Kickstarter, if you want to give to it, give to it, and the people that did can do that, and the people that don't want to, it doesn't really affect them at all. But instead, it's like, well, now we can't really do any kind of narrative-based thing. Because, you know, whoever that narrative is not in favor of in Eve is going to, like, completely shitpile it and just make it completely unappealing for anyone that's not already connected with the Eve community to want to have anything to do with us. I think that's a fair criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and don't forget that the backlash was in part triggered by the Reddit post that was made and then the pings going out to all the goons saying, you know, get onto Reddit, make an account if you don't have one, upvote this. So it's kind of organized upvoting of this Reddit thread, that was the trigger. That was the spark. Now, I'm not saying it's unreasonable for them to ping their members to say, hey, you know, we're plugging this book, but all of these things together, and then add into that the fact that it's from one perspective. It's not like the History of the Great Empires, which is, you know, looking at lots of perspectives, interviewing lots of different people, as you said, getting a lot of buy-in. This was zero buy-in, just we're doing this.
Yeah.
And then finally, $150,000. I mean, I'm not in the book publishing business. I don't know. But it seems to me for a book that's going to have a very limited audience, $150,000 seems quite a lot to me. I don't know.
It is. You know, I'm in the audiobook business, not on the print publishing side. But if you're not making a lot of printed books, you're not spending that much money. And, you know, I don't know. They may have perfectly justifiable spreadsheets, but, you know, I don't really see it. I don't see it being that. You know, I don't really get where that number came from. But I'm also not interested in being like, well, we should have an accounting of how that money is going to be spent. It's just like, yeah, I'm not going to fund that. That just seems awfully excessive. Was people also perceived this kind of like essential sort of arrogance, you know, because it happened when they released that State of the Union at the same time. They did this and then following on with the Viceroy stuff. And it just seems like, you know, people are responding less, you know, partially to the book and the fact that it's an editorialized, fictionalized account told from one biased perspective that will most likely impugn many people who don't deserve to be, but also just the sort of like, there's a certain amount of arrogance that people are seeing here that I think they're going to naturally want to respond to, and they're going to respond to it negatively.
And just for comparison, the History of the Great Empires Kickstarter was just over $95,000. To give people a concept of the relative scale there. So, I mean, I don't know what their game plan was. It seems like, I mean, maybe this is just bias because I have a better understanding of the work that was going into History of the Great Empires, but my understanding is that was going to be much more involved than, you know, writing a fictional book would take. So I would have expected the total to be closer to that amount. But at the same time, it doesn't keep me up at night that someone's trying to raise $150,000 for anything. You know, if people support the project, they'll support the project at the end of the day. It doesn't really bother me. I have not chosen to back the fictionalized version just because I don't really care.
Right, but that's right. They take a niche market, and then they slice it even more thinly by making it so, you know, goon biased. If they had, for example, spoke to the leaders from the HBC, you know, the Honey Badger Coalition, which was involved on the other side in the Fountain War, and they'd worked with them, that would have probably been a lot more positive, because now you've expanded your market. You haven't created enemies because you haven't created these people who are worried about what's going to be said about them in the book. And they probably would have been more successful.
Yep. Yeah. And it's official as of a couple of days ago that the Fountain War book fundraiser was canceled. So it's kind of a dead issue now. It's more of just doing an autopsy of what happened and why, and, you know, is this a closed door for future like projects? Like, will any Eve Kickstarter that's not like, doesn't go bending over backwards to either do something so far in the past that no one alive that's really passionate about it will care, or to like be so bland as to not offend anyone? Like, is that viable for us as a community now? Or is the door closed on this precedent? I hope that it's not.
I don't think it is. I think it's a combination of the entity behind it, who is not well liked in all circles, as I'm sure we all agree, the size of it, and what seemed to be the sort of like unreasonable way it was promoted, because people, that just leaves a bad taste in people's mouth. The idea that you're going to spend $95,000 on a fully researched, you know, because I got the impression that the one that did get funded was actually going to be more like a journalistic piece. And there's a lot that goes into that when you're trying to get accurate accounts from people all over the world. So that kind of thing I could understand. But when you're just dealing with a fictionalized account where you're only really telling one story, you know, people look at that and go, why would you need that? It just doesn't seem reasonable. And they didn't do a good job of selling it. Maybe there was something that they were going to be bringing to that, but I didn't really see it. And when you factor in how disliked a lot of the personalities are involved, it's not surprising that there would be that kind of thing. But I don't think in any way has it closed the door on this kind of thing for other entities who perhaps are seen as a little, you know, less maligned in the community. I think there's really no reason to assume that that can't work in other contexts.
Fang, what's your view?
I think it's not dead. I think there's certainly a lot of scope here for books, non-fiction and fiction, in the future. I think it was a PR disaster, clearly, and the goons are meant to be excellent at propaganda and PR, and they certainly failed on this one. But I don't think the door's closed. I think there's plenty of potential, and once the History of the Great Empires is released, that will be setting a benchmark. There's also an academic book. I was doing some research on this recently. There's an academic book being released in 2016 by a PhD, a postdoctoral professor in the United States, looking at Eve as an MMO from an academic perspective. It's a sort of collected writings anthology, I believe. So I think these books, once they're released, will set the benchmark. And I think there is a lot of scope and a lot of possibilities. So yeah, I don't think this is going to kill off the Eve book idea, but certainly put some cool it down a little bit while we wait for these books to actually come out, and then there'll probably be a second wave.
Yeah,
I think that's probably a pretty reasonable view on it. I'm really excited for History of the Great Empires. It's going to be fantastic. Everything I've seen of it's been really encouraging. A lot of people that I trust to have, good perspective on this sort of thing were involved in its creation, including Celine. And I heard the author talk. I heard both of the authors actually talk at Eve Vegas, and certainly the History of the Great Empires presentation was incredibly impressive in terms of the level of detail that he managed to get about events so far in Eve's past. The amount and quality of research that went into it is just outstanding. And if the guy can write half as well as he can speak on stage, I think we're in good hands with that project. And hopefully it will inspire more media about Eve. And I don't think it's just about books. Like, we also want to think about that Eve television show that will hopefully someday happen. The Eve movie. If we want Eve to really break into the mainstream, it has to be more than just a video game. And part of that is going to have to be, we're going to have to be able to tell engaging, cool, authentic stories. And sometimes that means telling the story of how your alliance got spanked.
Well, there are so many great stories in Eve. It would be almost criminal not to find a way to tell them in whatever form or context or media it needs to be done in. So I totally agree, because the Great War, the History of the Great Empires, that's going to be amazing. But it's like, when you look at the entire history of Eve, it's actually not that big. It was huge at the time, but there's many, many, many things of equal scope and scale that have happened in this game, and they're all worth telling.
Absolutely. Speaking of stories, a lot of them were exchanged at Eve Down Under, and I'm very excited to be able to share at least some of them with you. So I went to Eve Down Under, as I told you I would in the last podcast. It's the first time I've ever been to Australia. It was an amazing experience. I got to meet some Australian players from Noir Academy that I haven't met before, obviously. Especially in Ark's case, Ark Antantik's Carpe Noctem, who's been on the show before. I've been working with him for quite a while now, like at least a year or two. And he's an Australian director. He came up through Noir Academy and got promoted to a directorship pretty quickly. He's just an amazing, outstanding pilot in Eve, and a really great person. with an incredible set of professional skills, and I've really come to value the time that he's devoted to Noir, and you know, he's really an incredible part of the leadership team here. So to finally be able to see him in person the way that I've done with Delator and a few other people at eVegas and FanFest was just outstanding, and I want to thank him and Bam Stroker for giving me the opportunity to speak at EVE Down Under, which went well. We talked about our experience on Duality as part of the SAV beta, and you know, even though the room was full of people from Pandemic Legion and CVA and Pandemic Horde and Brave and Test and all these Goonswarm was there, all these different alliances that do a lot of SAV warfare, it was cool to see a lot of people coming up to me after the presentation and the next day at dinner being like, yeah, Alec, you know, we've been doing a lot of Entosis-ing, but you made some great points and we hadn't really thought about it like that before. And, you know, can I ask you this question? And if we were to adopt, like, here's how we've been doing it. Like, do you think this tactic is better? And, like, some really great discussions came out of that from people who do SAV warfare all the time. And it just goes to show you that in EVE Online, there's always something more you can learn, even about the thing that you do constantly.
That's cool. I wish I could have been there.
So it was a really great atmosphere. They are so tight-knit down there with the Australian community. It's out of this world. They ran, and I gotta shout this out, they ran the best PvP tournament I've ever seen at a live EVE event.
Neat.
Yeah, and I was not shy about this praise. Normally, a tournament like that is like, maybe it's on a side stage, the matches are fought, and maybe the finals are fought publicly, and it's not like the focus of the event. Then sometimes it's only mentioned in passing, it's not even a main stage thing. For this one, it was main stage, the entire thing. It was actually the main focus of the entire second day. Well, I guess there was a Friday, which was a poker tournament and a hangout, basically. And then there was Saturday, which was presentations. And then Friday was a little bit of presentations, some prize drawings, and this PvP tournament. They did everything in front of the crowd. There was all the seats were filled. The venue was small enough that the crowd could shout suggestions and jokes and criticisms at people, and you know, the people up on stage could hear it. They had to fit their ships live with a time limit.
Oh, God.
Which was comedy in itself. It wasn't like they were just given pre-fit ships or, you know, the camera was only on them once they got to the field. Like, both, it was like a split screen kind of thing. You know, people could see everything that was happening. And then they got out on the field and they fought one-on-one in Tech 1 Cruisers. Some of the fights were one-sided, but most of them are really competitive. And the crowd energy was such that, like, everyone's cheering every little blow or mistake or outplay. Despite they had a couple technical issues, but I mean, in terms of the format and the way they got the crowd involved, like, if you want to run an EVE tournament, you need to be talking to the guys at EVE Down Under and find out how they're doing it, because that's the way to do it right.
Neat.
What was the numbers? Was it like a 4v4, 5v5 or something? Or
1v1s.
Oh, this is 1v1s, okay.
Yeah, it was a dual tournament. And there's a CCP dev bracket. and they faced the winner of the overall tournament. So there's like a little celebrity bracket going on, and they fought just for bragging rights. But officially, CCP Puck is the best PvPer in Australia.
Nice.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And afterward, like, they were talking about ways they could improve it, like introducing ship bans or other things to keep things a little more variety heavy. But even with Ishtars and Caracals mostly owning the day, I was still pretty impressed with the diversity of the fights. The outcomes were very very difficult to predict, which is great. There was a lot of like comebacks and that kind of thing. It was really everything you could want out of it. Let's see, what else? Oh, Kigali was there. I got to meet him. He is Brave's CSM representative. He gave a very awesome talk about, you know, the level of toxicity in the EVE community, especially when we're speaking quote-unquote publicly, end quote, like on Reddit, other places, and how it's important for us to set a role model and create an environment that new players would want to come into. You know, being new player friendly is not just about giving people free ships. It's about, you know, the attitude and being welcoming and being positive. And he had a lot of good words to say about that. And hopefully that message is echoed elsewhere, you know, not necessarily related to the Kickstarter, but I think just in general. I know we're a very ruthless community, and that's one of the best things about us. Like, we min-max, we're ruthless, we try to break things, we try to break each other, we're very competitive. But at the same time, the EVE community is also very generous and welcoming and fun. And, you know, being able to present that side of ourselves is very important, very, very important to EVE's continued mainstream success.
Absolutely.
I got to meet a lot of folks from Providence. I would be remiss if I did not shout out Bethany, who is the tallest human being I've ever seen. He's like the great Kali. He's an American that's living in Australia now. He's just like enormous. It's like if I gave myself a piggyback ride, I'd have to stand on my tippy toes to be taller than him. Like, that's how big this guy is. He's like jacked too. But he's also like such as he's like a real cuddly bear. And we talked a lot, actually. I don't know, we just seemed to be spending a lot of time around each other. I think guys from, I forget their alliance name, something like Ruinous Intent or something like that. They're ex-Brave guys.
Calamitous Intent?
Huh?
Maybe Calamitous Intent?
No, it wasn't Calamitous. But they were ex-Brave, and they had just formed a new alliance. Maybe they were in Infamous. Not sure. I have to go back and look at my pictures, and I apologize to them in advance for forgetting who they were with. But those are really cool guys as well. But Bethany, man, what a unique individual. And it was cool because he's a director in CVA. And it was really amazing to hear him talk about like his struggles on improving his alliance's PvP competency, which is a big theme for Providence over the past year or two. Like, they've really gotten a lot better. And to hear him go through his struggles of, like, trying to get people to do that kind of thing and, like, dealing with special snowflakes and all that kind of stuff, was just really great to hear the perspective of someone else that's going through that kind of thing, and especially at CVA's scale and level, like, how he was dealing with it and his stories about it. Like, there was one guy who, for some reason, was super excited about running passes. I don't know why. He's like, yeah, man, I want to run passes. He's like, okay, well, you could run this one pass. He's like, no, I want to run like 15 passes. And he just wouldn't stop asking for 15 fucking pass to run. And so finally he was like, okay, here's 7. See how you do. And he's like, he goes, okay. And then a week later, they're still not up. And he's like, yeah, I want more. Let me get 10 passes. He's still not even running them, and he's still asking for more. Just a real unique individual over there. So, you know, being able to reminisce with Bethany about that was cool. Got him and Ark hugging it out. Ark being one of the most prolific R3 campers I've ever seen. That was a cool picture to get. And I also met a few other directors from CVA. Some very lovely ladies. One in particular. It was very nice to meet her as well. What else happened? There's a whole bunch of stuff outside of the actual EVE Down Under event. I saw the Hunger Games down in Australia for a ridiculous amount of money for a movie ticket, but it was still cool. It was definitely worth. I saw the Sydney Fish Market, which is brilliant. I went to the aquarium and the zoo. The aquarium was a bit lackluster, except for like 2 sections of it, which were amazing. Where you walk into these underground tunnels that are just covered with water. It's like a little walkway, and you are just inches from fish and sharks. And, there's 2 dugongs there, which are extremely rare. I think they're like one of the few in captivity. So to see them up close was just It was just great. But I definitely should not have done all that in one day, because afterward it's quite spent and just wanted to like fall over. What else did I do? So the botanical gardens. I went to the beach, Bondi Beach, very famous beach in Sydney. It was definitely awesome. Had a cool little Italian dinner at this weird place called the No Name Italian Restaurant. Just a random ass place in the, not in the hotel, but like in the patio behind the hotel. It was such a random asshole in the wall place, but I'll tell you what, it was fucking delicious. I had a chicken, I had a veal schnitzel with pasta, with a mushroom cream and bacon sauce.
Mmm, that does sound good.
Dude, out of this world. So that was a very good decision. And then we on Thursday went to Akugi Beach, which is a little bit south of Bondi. And Kigali Kigali had a barbecue for all of us. So I got to hang out with Kigali and Bam and a few other folks from Eat Down Under that were assisting with organizing the event. Shout out to Ariel Rin, who did a lot of the IT for Eve Valkyrie and did a really bang up job. He was also involved in the Eve Meet website, which is very cool. And Kigali's barbecue was off the chain. He had like 9 different salads, but did not skimp on the meat. We had pork chops, or I think they were pork chops. They could have been veal chops. Actually, no, they probably were veal chops. And ribs, pork ribs, which are great. I went to the beach. There was lots of wave riding and all that stuff. All in all, it was a pretty fantastic evening. Ark took me on a submarine that he actually served on in the Australian military. It was docked in the harbor. So I got a guided tour from Mark.
Nice.
Yeah, that was pretty unique.
How busy was Bondi?
Pretty crowded. Although I did go sort of later in the day because I did want to miss the crowds and because it was super hot that day. So I waited till it cooled a bit. I went at like 3-4 in the afternoon for a couple hours. So it had thinned a bit. But the waves there are intense. I was just getting hammered with wave after wave after wave. There was no swimming out past the waves and just floating for a bit. Like, you were always where the waves were at, and there's just one after another after another. I actually enjoyed myself more on Coogee Beach, which was a little more chill in terms of the surf. There was waves regularly, and they were enormous, but you could, like, swim out past them if you just wanted to relax. So that was much more my style. The waves were cool, though. And CCP did some pretty epic wave rides in terms of the body surfing. Especially CCP Guard and CCP Mimic.
Sounds like you had a good time down there, man.
Yeah. Probably a once, maybe twice in a lifetime trip. But definitely worth doing once. So I was glad that I went out there. And everybody made me feel super welcome, like an absolute superstar. It was great to meet more of the Australian community. And one final thing, I was blown away by how many fans we have in Australia. Hi, guys. Holy shit.
That's cool.
Easily a dozen, if not more, people. And a shout out to Lockett in particular, who, you know, I mean, he really poured his heart out about how much of a fan he was of the show. He's in Waffles and does not fly with Ninja Turtle, ironically. But he was just so incredibly thankful to meet me and had been such a big fan of the show from the very beginning. And was very excited to hear you coming back as well, Jimmer, by the way.
Like, that's cool. My God, that's I didn't amazing. Know that I had fans out there, which is really neat. You know, it's just like, oh, that's cool.
Right? I mean, I knew I had a few. I knew we had a few. I was not prepared for that many.
I knew we had regular listeners, but I never considered it that anybody would be like, hey, I really like this guy's work. You know, that's very gratifying. That's cool to know.
Yeah, several people. Some recognized me straight away. Some apparently recognized my voice when I got on stage. Didn't realize that like I was even going to be there. And like, holy shit. And literally every day people were coming up to me, new people that I hadn't met in the crowd yet. And were just like, oh man, I just wanted to come and say that. I really love your show. Like, when's the next episode coming out? I was like, oh man, this is awesome.
Nice.
So thanks, guys. I appreciate you listening very, very much. And it was so awesome to meet all of you. Don't be a stranger, like I told you in person. Like, if you want us to talk about something on the show, or you have a follow-up question, email me. Like, we really want to engage with the listeners more and hear about what you guys want to talk about, or be able to read fan mail and fan questions. And to have that coming from Australia as well would be super cool. So if you're listening to this and you're in the mood, send me a little love letter.
Yeah, nice.
All right, Command Destroyers. Fang, you've been testing them.
I have indeed. I was on the very first day that they were added to CC, because I was very interested to see what they were capable of. Now, I didn't test them all. I'd looked at the four ships beforehand and kind of decided what I was going to test. And I decided to go with the Galente, the Magus,
yes,
based on the Algos. And what I ended up, first thing I noticed when I started fitting it, is it's tanky. It's very, very tanky. Like, you can get this thing going fast and tanky. So it's going to be harder to put down than an Interdictor. The second thing I noticed is it doesn't have a huge amount of fitting. So you're not going to be able to set it up to support a fleet and have guns on it. And what I did in the end was I managed to get three newts into the high slots. And then I put a 400mm plate on it. And I put an armor wrapper on it. And then, you know, resist and everything. And then in the mid slots, it was the micro-warp drive and the whatever the jump module's called. I can't remember.
Micro-jump
field generator. Who, by the way, the dev that created that module was at Ethan Under.
Sweet. Anyway, so I fitted the thing up. I was on CCP. I had on CC. I had a few other friends with me, and you know, in fleet. So I was kind of flying with them, supporting. And I first thing I discovered, this thing is difficult to pull off. Like, the moves are hard to pull off. You need to be on your ball. If you're used to timing things, like if you're used to flying a stealth bomber and launching bombs and timing those things, you're going to have a head start with this ship. But if you're not, you need to think about distances, speeds, and timing, and very quickly. I discovered this playstyle, which I think is going to be rampant, which I call kidnapping. You know, you see a ship or a group of ships, and you think, I'm going to kidnap these guys, and you just go down, and you initiate the module, and as long as you time it right, you get there, and you kidnap the ships, and they come with you. I also fought a lot of ships in this thing using my newts and my drones. My God, the drones. It's an Algos, right? So this thing is very combat. This is very combat effective. It's a very combat effective ship. I'm not saying it's going to be great in solo PvP, because I don't think it is. But certainly when it's threatened by other small ships, which it will be in a fleet situation, because they want to stop you, you can fight back. And you can get a pretty, you know, it's got a great drone bay, great drone bandwidth. All in all, I was really impressed. I think these ships are going to be very popular. And then, you know, the fact that there's a counter to it, you either scram the command destroyer or you scram each other, because scram ships don't get carried. But everything else does. Drones do. Other ships, any sub-capital ship. It's also a great way to, like, if there's capitals somewhere, let's say you have your own capitals and your own capitals are being threatened by other sub-capitals, you know, heavy interdictors, you can go in there and get rid of those ships, knowing that your capitals will stay where they are because they don't get carried. But honestly, it's going to be the big ship of the release. The Tech 2 frigates were also on CC at the time, but they only had a Tech 1 resist profile at that point. They hadn't yet updated them. They probably have been updated by now, but I haven't had a chance to test. So I did use the scalpel a little bit, the frigate, the burst, Tech 2 burst. But really, I couldn't really make any comments because the Tech 1 resist profile meant that, you know, it was just a burst.
Awfully squishy, sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, one of the main advantages of the T2 Logifrigs is going to be the toughness.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to see, because, you know, we've been talking about the Command Destroyers since we heard about them, or since I heard about them, and people were talking about them before I came back to the game. But, you know, there's the thing that is most exciting to me is seeing just how many ideas people have for using these things. The number of possible combinations from the mundane, like, we're going to use these to kidnap people, as Fang said, or we're going to use these to pull harassment or tackle off of our own caps. Those are totally, you know, reasonable and probably the first things you'd think of. But I've heard some incredibly arcane and really, really cool ideas. Like you pull two, one starts and then the other starts, and that goes back to the timing thing. And then you warp into a fleet and then you warp back out. And it's just, you know, and I was just, while Fang was talking, I was like, wait a minute. I think if, you know, if these things can pull people under Gatecloak, and I don't know if they can or not.
They can.
Yes.
But oh, if they not can.
Gatecloak. No, not Gatecloak. But the cannot? Regular cloak, you can.
Okay. So what about, like, low-sec campers who have a hard time dealing with anything they can't fight while tanking gate guns? You just have one of these up near the gate, and you yank the people away from the gate gun so you can blap them. I mean, that's going to be a real useful tool for your low-sec people, assuming they work in low-sec,
also,
which is not something I've heard one way or another.
Also, as a counter to people who snipe, you know, someone who sits on a tornado off a gate, you can push him down towards the gate or towards your fleet or whatever. The other thing that I did test, which I forgot to mention, is the bombs. We did that, and it works. We had a squad of bombers. And then we had a command destroyer who was also cloaked. We warped our bombers to the position. I can't remember the distances now. We calculated it all. The bombers decloak. They drop the bombs, and then the command destroyer pilot, who was counting like 3 seconds in his head, he would then decloak, hit the button, and then as the bombs landed, he would then move the bombs 100 kilometers down and we would bomb the target. And he had, you know, with the tank, with the resist bonus and everything, it's also very easy for the command destroyer not to die to those bombs. It took some damage, but it's not a problem. So yeah, using them to move bombs around is actually quite viable.
If you want to get next level with that, you can add a second command destroyer to the mix. Yeah. Have him wait. In terms of timing for the bombs to actually explode or at least fly out of their jump range, and then jump both him and the first destroyer out as well, plus maybe one or two targets that get hit by bombs.
Yep.
You can get really nasty with these things.
Are you familiar with the movie Galaxy Quest, guys?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. The whole description Fang just brought just put me in mind of that closing scene. It's like, what you haven't been thinking of is that my ship is dragging mines. That's just going to, we're going to have to call that the Galaxy Quest maneuver or something like that. Never give up, never surrender, because that's exactly what it is. I'm picturing, you know, like the bombers decloak, they drop their bombs, and you could do this with like a massive bomber fleet because there's no limit. All they have to do is be within 6 kilometers of the command desi, right?
Yeah, in fact, you can even prearrange a daisy cutter because they'll maintain their speed and trajectory. Just daisy cutter your jump destroyer and have him jump 100 clicks into the enemy fleet so you daisy cutter them at zero.
And you could set up repeated waves of these things too. If you had enough coordination and, you know, get like, okay, wing one, and then they start doing their timers. Wing two, go. I mean, you could really, really mess up somebody's day with these. If you're good and your fleet is on point, you're going to have a good time with these. I can definitely see it. There's going to be a lot of tears, many, many tears.
All right, let's move on. We also had major changes announced to newts and reps. Reps especially, but it's a mechanic that got started with newts. So, as most of our highly intelligent listeners because we have the most intelligent audience in podcasting. Certainly, Eve podcasting. When you have an electronic warfare effect, when you have an electronic warfare effect like a sensor dampener, and it's in fall, it does not reduce the effectiveness of the damp. It's just, you know, it'll either apply or it won't apply. In other words, it's a much like a gun. It will either hit or it will not hit. However, CCP now has code to add reduced effectiveness and falloff for certain modules, and they're debuting this with neutralizers and reppers. Newts are getting a falloff bonus, or not a falloff bonus, but a falloff element, in which if you activate it, it'll still newt something, just not as much. And the corresponding newt ships are getting bonuses that'll match this. There's also adding dead space newts, which I presume will have longer range and falloff.
And maybe better fitting requirements.
Or more cap neutered or some kind of advantage.
Range. The big advantage of the dead space newts is going to be the range.
Roger.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They're also applying this falloff to reps and logistics, which are getting some major changes. Reppers are now having a longer optimal range with some falloff, but logistics ships are getting reduced bonuses. So they'll... it's a little interesting in that shield, it seems, will have a longer falloff but shorter optimal than current, whereas armor will have probably the same or slightly shorter optimal ranges, but a very short falloff. And you know,
which is kind of crap considering how hard it is right now to run armor logistics.
That's the thing. There's a big debate on how easy it is or isn't to run logistics in EVE, and certainly this, along with the increased cycle time that is being added, is going to make being a logistics pilot much more difficult skill-wise.
Yeah, not just in-game skill, but pilot skill.
Yeah, the fall-off mechanic is going to be combined with an increased cycle time, so if you activate a rep on someone, it'll increase the same amount per second. It'll just be a larger amount at the end of a longer time. So if you attack someone and then switch targets to something else with a fast-firing weapon, you can catch logistic pilots flat-footed if they put all their reps on the first dude. That's going to be a thing. Generally speaking, this is a huge nerf to Logi.
Yeah.
But there is a slight buff to like remote rep battleships with the base optimal range of the module itself being increased. How it's going to play out, a little hard to say. I think it's definitely going to have a huge impact on the meta. I suspect DPS fits might come back more as opposed to Alpha Strike fits. We'll see how that actually plays out, though.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be, you know, depending on how some of the other stuff shakes out with the blob breakup modifications, you know, the command desis and the jump field generators and so forth. It's going to be interesting because I don't know if we can really predict what the final outcome is going to be in terms of what the preferred techniques will be for flying post update when these all come out. Because, you know, with the fall off changes and the changes to optimal and the changes to cycle time for reppers, right now there's already some challenges when you're dealing with large fleets primarying a ship and the cycle time of your reppers and stuff. And, you know, we've developed techniques to help mitigate that. But now that we're going to have longer cycle times, deeper rep, and but also combined with possibly having the logistics yanked all over the field, I'm not totally certain where this is going to come out, you know, and I think it's going to possibly give a role to have some of these Tech 2 logistics frigates that is going to be more important than I think a lot of us are considering right now, because they're going to be much more agile and nimble and able to get to where they need to be more quickly.
That's true. They're also going to have reduced rep amounts, but as you note with all the positional gameplay, it may be more important to have them be maneuverable than be able to rep, you know, very... And I imagine the frigate reppers will probably have a shorter cycle time. So the more nimble and rapid response frigate may have a higher value than a cruiser in some cases.
Yeah, I think what we'll start seeing potentially is you know, T2 logistics frigates as the Logi for cruiser gangs, because they will be more able to apply reps more quickly, assuming they do have that shorter cycle time you're talking about, and they will be more capable of getting back into position when they're broken up or when the fleet's pulled apart.
Yeah, I think there's a risk. There's certainly a lot of rumors, people saying, you know, armor is dead because of the range issue that there's going to be. There's already the disadvantage of the reps landing at the end of the cycle plus the range issue. Not so sure because the shield fall-offs are also a lot more brutal. But I certainly think it's something that might need tweaking. Like, I see this as a change that we might see a couple of updates in the coming weeks where they play with the numbers once people start actually testing this stuff live on Tranquility.
And it'll certainly be interesting to see.
I also think that the Dead Space Newts, I think, are going to be, and the Newt fall-off change, I think, is going to be a big thing in low sec. In situations where you see a lot of frigate PvP, which has developed into this dance of, you know, blaster boats versus scram kiting autocannon boats and so on and so forth, right now you can't really Newt into scram range and beyond, whereas now you'll be able to Newt into scram range and even beyond. Not at full effectiveness, but with the fall-off, 50% effectiveness at one fall-off. So I think the 1v1 matchups in those factional warfare plexes and things, that's all going to get shaken up by these nudes. And so if you're someone who does a lot of frigate PvP, you should be looking at your ships and any ships that have room for the utility nudes, because that is going to be very interesting.
Agreed. It's going to be fascinating.
Mm-hmm. We've also got some contract updates to talk about. It's been a while. We've got one contract ongoing, which I guess we may cut for time since it is ongoing. But we had a contract in Cloud Ring, aka Content Ring. And it was us versus our good old friends and psycho ex-girlfriend, Suddenly Spaceships. To evict them from the one system that they managed to take in sovereignty. The backdrop for all of this was a leaked alliance meeting from Suddenly Spaceships, where Buddha's Princess outlined their grand plan to backstab all of their allies, except one, and then reset the rest of the ring, evict everyone else out, replace them with Renners, and manage that under, ostensibly the protective wing of the CFC by proxy of SMA, although not actually being endorsed or having anything to do with the CFC really at all. As you can imagine, that didn't go over well with all the people that were planned on getting betrayed, and the CFC was like, the fuck? We don't have anything to do with this. The SMA was like, I don't think that's really what we talked about. And so they were pretty much on their own, them and OSS, who are their long-standing friends from Black Omega Security. And that's pretty much it. All their other allies fell away. There was a kind of invasion-type thing with Waffles and Brave in Cloud Ring, and we were hitting the back end of it against Suddenly Spaceships. And it was quite fun. The highlight was by far a major, major capital fight on a Noir Tower in our staging system in Syndicate.
God. What a hairball that was.
Yeah. We had set up an XL SMA, which is what you would store a Titan in if you ever wanted to get out of said Titan. And like clockwork, Suddenly Spaceships reinforced it. Except we never actually had a Titan there. It was in another tower entirely. So they reinforced this tower that they assumed had a Titan in it and committed all these forces to killing it. And us, I think Waffles, Pandemic Legion, a few other groups came in. Who else was in there? Fwedit was in there, I think, at one point.
The Culture.
The Culture, yes, the Culture was there. OSS was there. Major capital brawl.
100 billion down.
Tissue was also there.
Yep. Sorry for missing a couple alliances that were also there. It was kind of chaotic, but that was like the grand finale fight. And as Jimmer noted, a high amount of ISK died. Was it I don't know if it was actually.
It was over 100 billion, at least according to the reports I saw. I mean, I didn't like add up the numbers on killboards, but it was a lot. It was a hell of a lot.
That might have been the total amount. We didn't kill all of that or get them.
No. That was the full, all the ships dying in the full battle was over 100 billion down.
So it was a massive fight, essentially over nothing, because they got baited super hard.
They did kill the tower.
They did. They did. Golf clap. Killed the tower, lost their entire Dreading carrier fleet for the European time zone. Just about, anyway. And they also wound up losing the system shortly thereafter through intosising from us and Waffles. The total amounts, at least that we were personally involved with, just over 59 billion killed, just under 10 billion lost, efficiency 85%, and good times were had by all.
It was fun. It was fun.
They have a very tricky fleet doctrine to
fight. Come back to that. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alan.
They had a very tricky fleet doctrine to try to figure out how to fight. They were using Macarials with triage, and they had more caps than we could counter-escalate with. So we had to do a lot of trial and error theory crafting to figure out what we needed to do to beat that meta with the tools that we had available, which is a neat little sub-meta game as well.
Yeah, and they were no slouches. I mean, even though we ended up winning on the ISK war and accomplishing the objectives, it wasn't like we just walked in and says, "Yeah, it's over." It was a fight.
Absolutely.
It was a fight indeed, and it put Syndicate back on the map. I mean, I got messages from some people saying, "What's going on in Syndicate? I thought PvP in Syndicate was dead."
Get a big red blob on Dotland, and people are like, "Ooh."
And well timed, sort of during and definitely after, we have a very cool piece of Merc news. Pandemic Legion lost a corp, and MC got it. Body Count Incorporated, one of the original founding member corps of Mercenary Coalition, has come home. BDCI is now part of MC, and they're doing quite well. This brings a massive super capital fleet to the table, as well as a lot of experienced 00 big fight pilots. And it's just really great to have them back, to have Celine with us full time, and just, I think morale-wise, having a founding corp rejoin the Alliance was pretty well received. But Fang, I'm sure you have words about this, about the significance of it and everything leading up to it.
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, obviously there'd been some rumors internally for a while, but when I heard the news, I was still surprised. And it's been great. It's been great to have all the new people with us, new old people, and combination of people who've been in the game nonstop and some people who've been away for like 6 or 7 years coming back and hilariously losing expensively fit ships because they didn't realize some new mechanic, etc., etc. It's been really cool, and I think with their experience, we can only get stronger. Rah rah rah.
Rah.
I'm really pleased to be in an alliance with those guys. It's really cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Definitely pleased.
And, I feel like I can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, I think they're going to be great for the alliance in general. Just a good influence. I think in many ways MC is turning a corner, especially with... we even just had a meeting about it today. Like, we've sort of reached this critical mass of numbers now, and we're focusing now on getting the experienced, really strong pilots, especially in BDCI and Noir, and some of the senior pilots from the other corps, to spend more time with the younger players and younger FCs, and just doing that knowledge transfer and getting everybody up to the same level. And now that we have this gigantic core of pilots with all the nice shiny toys to go with it, like, we're now focusing on getting those pilots better. And once that happens, I mean, MC is just going to be an unstoppable juggernaut. No two ways about it.
Damn, Skippy. Good times ahead.
Oh, yeah. All right, guys. EveServers.info, our other faithful sponsor. Stop trusting your information to random third parties. You know, with Eve servers, you and only you have access to your Corp and Alliance information. They'll set you up with a fully functioning professional web server with complete API integration that's simple setup, simple to use. They have lots of Eve-related services that you would, you know, typically want to have, like TeamSpeak forums, a Jabber-type situation for pings, and various Corp management tools. Everything is set up very simply, no headaches, nothing like that. Email them, eveservers@gmail.com, for more information about you can get your Corp and Alliance hooked up on eveservers.info. And with that, guys, that's the episode. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. And, of course, you feel free to leave a comment on the episode. You can always reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir. We have a brand spanking new recruitment portal. Go check it out. NoirMercs.com has a complete new look. If you've ever thought about joining Noir or Noir Academy, this is really one of the best times to do it. The holidays are coming up. Everybody's happy. MC is going great. We've got awesome changes to the game that are happening that are going to be really impactful in everyone's playstyles. We're so excited for them. Come be a part of the Declarations of War community, basically, by joining Noir in-game. It's something you will not regret. And with that, good hunting, listeners. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we will talk to you again before Christmas.